I welcome Mary Kissel, my colleague, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former Senior Advisor to the Secretary of State. Mary, greetings. There is a report in the New York Times, echoed in the Wall Street Journal and other newspapers around the world, that Mr. Trump, President-elect Trump, will name the Senator from Florida, Marco Rubio, to be the new Secretary of State. You worked at State Department. Senators coming into State Department have some advantage. What I'm keen about Marco Rubio is that he has been a strong voice for Latin America, his parents from Cuba, and for the whole of the Americas for some time. What do you expect from a Marco Rubio State Department? What can we expect from the Trump administration work for the State Department? Good evening to you, Mary.
Good evening to you, John. Always great to be with you. I think if this reporting is correct, it's a very interesting appointment by President Trump. Just politically speaking, Florida is a deeply Republican state now. So the likelihood of having an unpopular Republican replacement for him is unlikely. And even if it is, it's likely another Republican would win the next time the votes were taken. So you don't have to worry about his replacement. Rubio himself, as you say, is a very instinctual politician. He is from a family of Cuban immigrants. He speaks very eloquently about the evils of communism. And because of that, he has, ever since joining the Senate in 2010, carved out a very unique place as probably the most articulate defender of freedom in the U.S. Congress writ large. Well, I've always thought that Secretary of State would be a great role for him. Because to be successful there, it's not enough to know government, which Marco Rubio does, or to know people around Washington and the world, which Marco Rubio does. You also have to have a set of core beliefs and principles, and certainly he has that. He's been banned from China, so the Chinese Communist Party obviously feels threatened by him because he can make that case of why a free China would be so far superior, not just for the Chinese people, but for freedom and stability in the world. I think what remains to be seen is, first of all, that official Trump stamp, which is important. But secondly, just how much control he would have over policy. Remember, too, that, Rubio ran against Trump for president the first time around and was humiliated by him, called him Little Marco. He never really recovered. Certainly doesn't seem to harbor presidential aspirations after that experience. And so, to some extent, this can also be seen as an act of generosity on behalf of incoming President Trump, and someone who is, I wouldn't say subservient, but may not have the same sort of clout as an independent voice like, say, Elon Musk, who is, in many respects, very pro-China. So that's, again, that's speculation. We'll have to see. But certainly in the current administration, the Biden-Harris team, the State Department did not run foreign policy. Anthony Blinken did not set the course. That was the National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan. And there are always those kinds of battles within administrations. So how would a Secretary of State Rubio interact with National Security Advisor Mike Waltz? I think it would be a cordial relationship. I've met both men. I know, the proposed National Security Advisor better. I think they would work well together, but remains to be seen who would take what portfolio and what kind of resistance they might face to their agenda.
Let's march to the sound of guns to the Middle East. Hamas continues to pepper the region with threats. Hezbollah continues to pepper the region with rockets, some 100 to 200 a day over the border. The author of these depredations is in Tehran. Right now, it is said that the new foreign minister in Israel, Mr. Katz, says Iran is the problem. I don't think anyone disagrees. Bibi Netanyahu is now completely in control of the war cabinet. Gallant, the former minister of defense, has departed under unhappy terms. The question is, what is to be done about Tehran? Negotiation, confrontation. The raid over Tehran recently conducted by the IAF ended, I'm told, Iranian air defense. Mary, could we see the U.S. and the Trump administration standing back and endorsing by nodding a strike at the leadership in Tehran or the military leadership in Tehran and decap, like as the IAF has done with Hezbollah?
Well, there are two historical points that we can observe. First, that President Trump was the toughest president on the Islamic Republic of Iran since the mullahs took power in the late 70s, early 80s. And he is likely to reinstate that maximum pressure campaign to curtail their ability to spread terror as the world's largest state sponsor of terrorism. And secondly, we can look to what President Trump has said. And he was asked about Israel's situation, and he remarked very naturally and quickly, Bibi should do what he needs to do. So that can certainly be interpreted as a green light to secure Israel's security. The question is, what would that entail? I think Israel has done a remarkable job of decapitating Hamas and dismantling Hezbollah. It's probably the most effective dismantling of a terrorist organization in the fastest time that we've ever seen in the modern age. And they've done a great job there. Hezbollah no longer can do cross-border raids into northern Israel, and their ability to manufacture rockets has been, you know, taken out, and their leadership has been almost wholly decapitated. Not just, and they've done strikes not just in places like Lebanon and Gaza, but inside Iran itself. So you know, the question really is, in a democracy like Israel, what will make Israelis feel safe? Because it's clear that the Israeli people do not want to live under the shadow of terrorism anymore. They've seen what happens when they tolerate terrorist groups on their border, and they're not going to have that happen again. October 7th, not let it happen again. So that's a judgment call. Certainly, I think Bibi is more prone to cooperate and communicate with President Trump and his incoming team than the Biden-Harris team, simply because you know, the Biden-Harris team tried to have it both ways, tried to put political pressure on the Israeli leadership rather than on the Hamas leadership that murdered all of those people, including Americans, including taking hostages, including American hostages. So I don't think that President Trump wants a regional conflict. He's been very clear that he's anti-war. He relied on deterrence in the past, but this is a new situation. I think taking out the nuclear facilities in Iran could not be accomplished without significant U.S. help, simply because they're dug so deep into mountains. And whether or not President Trump wants to expend his political capital to do that instead of simply choking the regime financially, diplomatically, economically, remains to be seen. But I tend to think that he would try the non-kinetic approach first before he would, you know, assist the Israelis in a raid that really could, you know, ignite a regional conflict. But you know what, John? I'm just guessing. It could be that, you know, that the Israelis have so decapitated Iran by taking out its missile defenses that this is the best time to take out the nuclear program and try to finally bring peace and stability to the Middle East. We'll see. I'm just speculating here, but I think the one thing we can say for sure is that there will be a far closer relationship between the U.S. and Israel, and the maximum pressure campaign will come back.
I'm speaking with Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former Senior Advisor to the Secretary of State. We're marching to the sound of guns. When we come back, Ukraine. I'm John Batchelor.